If there's one thing to learn from watching rally racing, whether it be the World Rally Championship or old Group B footage, it's that a small car with all-wheel drive is a match made in snow-covered road heaven. Throwing in a turbocharged engine in a proper wagon body style, and it's hard to deny both the fun and cool factor, despite its affinity for front-wheel drive cars, especially in its legendary 99 and 900 badges. Swedish automaker Saab still managed to sell one of its properly cool cars as a wagon with all-wheel drive, the 92X Aero. But here's the thing. It wasn't a true Saab, but a mashup of GM DNA mixed with Subaru?
What?
And it was entirely built by Subaru, too?
Yep.
But let's take a step back and try to get an idea of where it all started, guys. When did Saab start slipping away? What did platform sharing and badge engineering mean for Saab's legacy and survival? And will we ever see Saab again? Well, we'll find out today on Pass Gas. It's the final part in our two-part series on Saab.
What an appropriate episode to have our guest today, yeah. Justin, our resident Subaru freak.
Oh, yeah.
Subaru freak.
Loves
you're
Subarus.
A Subaru freak. You got the freakiest Subaru car I think I've ever seen in my life.
Which is funny because Saab is one of those kind of quirky.
You're a Subaru guy, but not just a Subaru guy, a weird car guy.
Yeah.
You like weird cars. He's our resident. We thought you liked weird stuff.
No, I just like old stuff.
You just like old stuff. Yeah. So you're our resident old stuff guy. Justin, resident weird stuff guy.
Oh, yeah.
What's your fleet look like, Justin?
Yeah, you have a new update us.
So I have my Tundra, that's my daily.
If you thought that was normal, don't worry. That's where it ends.
that is exactly where it ends.
I don't think...
It has a tray.
I have...
That's weird.
He even made Australian, his regular car weird.
Very Australian inspired.
I love the tray.
It looks really good. It's really dope, really usable.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Get to the weird.
All right, cool. So, here's the fun stuff. I have three Subaru SVXs.
Okay. For our family at home who doesn't know what weird car, what is a Subaru SVX?
Subaru SVX is a...
Subi Coupe?
Subaru Coupe from the 90s with half windows like a DeLorean.
It's so sick. I love them.
Designed by Giorgetto.
Giorgio.
Yeah, really, really quirky car. Really all-wheel drive, flat six, 3.3 liter. Sounds like a Porsche if you do the exhaust.
Ooh,
all came in automatic. They all came in automatic, which made them fail miserably. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know how to market it.
It's kind of a strange car in retrospect, especially at that time when they're going up against your 180 SXs.
Well, everyone was releasing luxury brands.
Yeah.
So Subaru was like, let's not release a new brand. Let's just try and release a luxury car.
Yeah.
It did not work out for them.
So this is like not really competing with like a 180 SX because it was like super luxury.
More 3000 GT.
3000 GT.
3000 GT.
Okay. Yeah. But it never got a turbo.
Lexus SC400.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Bingo.
What else you got there, Justin?
So I eventually went down the rabbit hole of getting the predecessor of the SVX.
Oh, that one wasn't weird enough. Let's go older. That's what Justin said.
Let's go older. 80s, baby. So got the one of the pop-up lights. I got the Subaru XT6.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what led Subaru down. This is the car that inspired Giorgetto to design the SVX the way it is. He got one of these and changed it up. But flat six, all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Not turbo like the Saabs, but same kind of idea.
And one of the weirdest steering wheels I've ever seen in my
life.
It
is an L-shaped steering wheel, yes.
Very weird. You just bought something recently, though. That's very strange.
So my love for wedge cars kept growing.
Yeah.
And I came across an Isuzu Impulse on eBay that was garage kept since 1992 and only has 73,000 miles on it.
Wow. Where'd you find that?
Here.
Isn't it?
In Redlands.
No way.
Yeah.
That was Justin's latest addition to the parking lot.
Yeah.
I like it. It's cool.
Oh, it's dope.
It's cool. It looks like a Volkswagen Scirocco, but it's rear wheel drive.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It's very like 80, 86
kind of. That's kind of the goal. It's the broke man's 86 if you can find one.
Cool. All right. So that's Justin. That's Justin Freeman. Welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. Joined as always by my co-host, James Pumphrey.
Give me back my son.
He's back.
Nolan's dad was in town
recently.
And he's pissed.
Yeah.
James wants Nolan back.
I'm pissed. I'm Omicron free and ready to
Boogie. And they were finishing.
Joe's in Paris.
Joe, yeah, he went to Paris with his fiancée.
He's like, I got to see what all this bread is about.
Yeah, I'm excited for them. But yeah, he'll be back next week. This is our finale for Saab. Interesting car company so far.
Why don't you catch us up?
There was a car that had a two-stroke engine.
Got it.
And it was front-wheel drive.
Okay.
Sick.
I'm pretty sure that's the one where, like, the problem was the wheels would get, like, jammed up with snow.
Oh, shit.
All the founders of the company.
Uh-huh.
They might have worked for the Nazis a little
bit.
Oh,
come on.
Yeah.
Darn it. Well, luckily it was only a might have.
Might have. Well, they did build like a lot of car companies. What is it? The Junkers U-86, which was a German Nazi bomber plane.
Okay.
They built that on license. So I think they might have built that.
It's all right. Japan's not really in the
exactly.
Clean
look,
seat
either. Yeah. Look, we love
listen,
Porsche.
Listen, if you make cars, you've probably committed horrible war crimes.
It's likely.
On both sides.
Yes. Yeah. So.
You probably made cars because you couldn't make war crimes anymore.
So.
It's like, yeah, we made all this money doing those war crimes.
They did that. And then where did we leave off? In the 80s, I think. Oh, yeah. Okay. They had the Saab 900. That was like a cool car. The Saab 99 was a cool car.
My stepmom had a 900 convertible.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Red.
Yeah.
Ooh,
oh, we turbo. Talked about architects and dentists and stuff last
week. I'm sure you did. Yeah. Architects love Saabs. Now, who else loves Saabs? The character, Jerry Seinfeld.
That's right. We talked about that, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we talked about Putty, and we deliberated whether the episode with the Saab and the mechanic was the one where Putty stole Jerry's move. We determined that was not the case.
That was not the same episode.
I get them crossed up. Are you cool. caught up? Do you feel ready
to
tackle
I feel
this?
Great. I feel like I was here last week. That's right. About as more than I
now
usually
we're getting
remember.
To the,
it's probably because you did the up to speed on Saab.
I did do the up to speed on Saab years ago that I remember.
Perfectly, because you did it off the dome.
I did it off the dome. I do them all off the dome. I just they say, hey, I go, we start fresh.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
And that's why they call you the Encyclopedia of Cars.
They call me the Encyclopedia of Cars.
Encyclopedia. That sounds like a crummy nu metal album, like a third Encyclopedia from Static X.
Encyclopedia.
Encyclopedia. Should we talk about Saab some more?
Yeah.
All right. Before we talk about cars, though, guys, we need to talk about Saab's most famous ad campaign, Born from Jets. And that means talking about jets.
Hell yeah, dude.
Okay.
Heck yeah.
So last week we learned about the plane Saab made during World War II that may or may not have been for the Nazis. But it wasn't until the mid-1950s that they came out with their first jet. The planes Saab is perhaps best known for are the Lancen, the Draken, the Viggen, and the Gripen.
Nice.
It's cool they came out with jets after the war.
Yeah. That's probably a good thing. The Lancen was first introduced in 1956. It was the Swedish Air Force's first twin-seat jet aircraft and was the first to be equipped with an integrated search radar. Nice. That's pretty cool.
Sick.
There were three primary variants of the Lancen. There was an attack plane, a fighter, and reconnaissance plane. Power was provided by a single engine called the Svenska Flygmotor RM5A2 or a turbojet variant. Lancen had a lengthy operational life and was retired in 1997.
Wow.
So pretty long life there.
Oh, that's really long.
Yeah.
Then there was Princess Di.
Oh,
follow the money.
He went there.
Yeah, I did.
He went there, folks.
Sorry.
The Draken took its first flight in 1955.
I don't pull punches.
No. The Draken took its first flight in 1955, introduced to frontline service in 1960. But guys, the Saab 35 Draken is known for its many firsts in aviation. It was the first Western European-built combat aircraft with supersonic capability.
Hell yeah.
Which is sick. It was also the first Western European aircraft to exceed Mach 2 in level flight.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
Very cool. Let's see. It was the first combat aircraft designed with double delta wings. Take a look at this thing.
It's a triangle.
It is a triangle. It's a flying triangle. It's sick as hell.
Like, I love cars.
So like, if I were going to commute in a jet.
Yeah.
This would be in my fleet.
Sweet. Oh, dude. It was also the first known combat aircraft capable of performing a Cobra maneuver, which is when the plane's going like this and then like
vertical.
Pulls up and stalls a little bit to slow down. That's
I think
pretty
I
sick.
Built one of these, like a model.
I think you did. I think you did.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I
don't
so.
Think you did.
I think I did.
The Draken
we voted.
Proof.
Yeah. We voted.
Yeah, Draken functioned as a fighter aircraft during the Cold War, but it was never actually used in battle. The Swedish Air Force opted to retire the model in 1999. RIP. Then there was the Viggen, which is a single-seat, single-engine, multi-role combat aircraft that first took flight in 1967 and officially introduced in 71. This was the first to carry an airborne digital central computer with integrated circuits for avionics, meaning computers to fly the plane.
Oh, I built a Viggen.
A Viggen, yeah. The Viggen's
the
sick.
Two wings.
Oh, I do love the Viggen.
That one two sets recognize. Of wings.
This section's really for me.
Yeah. I mean, we're all enjoying it. There's nothing, the only thing cooler than cars is jets.
Jets are sick.
And quite literally,
1,000%.
You either start with jets, trucks, or planes.
Yeah.
You know, rigs.
Yeah, I've told you guys this story before.
Tell it again.
I went to the NASCAR championship a few years ago when Joey Logano won.
Was that at Miami, Homestead?
Yeah, it was in Miami. And Joey Logano had just won the entire season of NASCAR, and he like won that race too, so like it was like a total win, big day for this guy. And
sounds like F1.
Yeah, he's on the podium and he's like getting his trophy for the whole season, and the two pilots who did the flyover, these fighter jet pilots, one of them they had a couple beers probably, and one of them leans into the other one and he goes, "That guy didn't fly a fighter jet today." And me and Jesse were like, "He's right." Like, that's the coolest thing ever.
It's awesome.
But George Bush did. Sick.
Yeah. If any of us could not drive cars anymore and fly jets, we 100% would.
Right. That was one of the reasons I was inspired to join the military. It was like, I could be a fighter jet pilot. Like, why not?
Yeah.
But then you realize, like, they almost cyborg you together, make sure you're the perfect human in order to do it. So if your vision's...
So I probably would have done it, huh?
If your vision's not good enough, then you're
not my vision's not good enough. Mm. I had to give up on that dream.
Yeah, I could tell by your glasses.
Yeah.
They check
it's kind of... It's not very inconspicuous. So those avionics did a bunch of automating and taking over tasks that previously the pilot had to do, made it easier to fly.
Easier for me.
Yeah, easier for you.
More time.
Raises the ceiling for the
more
plane.
More time to get them bogeys. Mm. You know, more time to concentrate on the bogeys.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is good. And the missions.
And the missions.
Yep.
It was, the Viggen was retired in 2007.
We like to think about when we're up there.
Yeah. You're just having fun.
Yeah.
Finally, there was the Gripen, which was a light, single-engine, supersonic, multi-role fighter aircraft, first flown in 1988. Introduced to service in 1996, and is still in use today. It was originally designed to replace both the Draken and the Viggen, and crafted to be a smaller and affordable Mach 2 aircraft with a good short field performance in the event of invasion. However, the advanced multi-role fighter isn't without its naysayers. After the Viggen was criticized for taking up too much of Sweden's military budget, the Gripen just barely received government approval to be constructed at all. There's been continuous criticism about the Gripen since. There's crashes in both 89 and 93 that didn't help. And in 2008, Saab announced reduced earnings, partly due to increased marketing costs for the much maligned aircraft. How much marketing?
Yeah, why are you marketing
to
the military?
That's crazy.
They're going to fly it.
I met a pilot when I was serving, and he was like, "Yeah, I've got a clean flight track record." Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I would hope so.
Yeah, what does that mean?
What do you mean? You can crash and keep flying?
I think you can. I think John McCain back in like the 60s and 70s crashed like 3 times.
Yeah.
Wow.
Saab will sell these to like, not the U.S., but, you know, smaller countries in Europe and maybe around the world. Like I said, an affordable option. You know, not a lot of countries can afford stuff like the F-35 or F-22. We don't sell the F-22, actually. We do sell the F-35, though. But it's a less capable version of the one that we have.
Of course.
Got to keep people on their toes. Okay. So, all that to say, it's the same company. They build jets, and they also build cars, so they are born from jets. You know what I'm saying?
So, jets is what inspired my cars. They're all very heavily 80s jet inspired.
The SVX especially looks like a jet, for sure.
Well, all of them do. The XT is the one out there.
Oh, yeah. You can definitely see it. They, like, black out the pillars, and that makes it look more like a bubble cockpit.
Everyone definitely was jet-like. Going for that in the 80s and 90s.
And now, time to pay the bills. 1985 saw the introduction of one of Saab's heaviest hitters, the 9000. However, its creation differed from what the brand did before that point.
This thing's sick.
Its chassis was co-developed with Italy's Fiat Group and sold as the Alfa Romeo 164, Fiat Croma, and Lancia Thema. Models we never got here in the U.S.
Aww.
Enthusiasts refer to it as the Type 4 project. In short, the idea behind this joint venture was to save development money for entry into the premium luxury market. For those of us in the U.S. who remember Saab being a household name in European automobiles, it seemed like it always was a premium brand. That's mainly due to how it was marketed. The 99, 900, and their predecessors were all considered mid-tier transportation for the masses. The 9000 was kind of like a Toyota Avalon or Volkswagen Arteon. Something that gave premium luxury brands a run for their money.
I think I understand.
Bjorn Engvall, of course, head of Saab Design for many years and co-designer of the 9000, summed up its requirements as such. I must feel at home with the car, at one with it, not necessarily with every single detail, but with the overall design. I want the car to feel comfortable and easy rather than big to drive.
Naturally.
And although it should obviously provide a sense of power and driving pleasure, the interior should be extremely spacious. Co-design. I'm crazy we got that audio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How lucky is that?
We're just great researchers. Yeah. It's not luck. It's hard work. Co-designed by legendary Italian designer Giorgetto Giugiaro.
Oh, it's a Giugiaro joint.
The Giugiaro joint. We love Giugiaro. Giugiaro's having a resurgence.
Yeah.
You can see Giugiaro influence all over.
Everywhere, especially Hyundai or Kia, whatever.
Well, he was the designer of the century. The brand's first attempt at the executive class was beautifully executed.
Oh.
It may have shared a platform with three other brands, but it retained a quintessential Saab-ness. As Giugiaro himself said of its design, a Saab, a Lancia, and a Fiat came to me because working with some bodywork elements in three different styling centers, they were afraid that the solutions could be a very similar to one another. In Italian design, we are used to working for different brands, maintaining their peculiarity.
Until they give him open reins and he designs the exact same thing.
Yeah, he just...
write what you know.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
But what he knew was wedges.
He knew wedges. He knew basic shapes.
he knew four eyes.
Yeah, four eyes.
Super flat hood at whatever angle.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of brackets inside the taillight.
Yeah.
Would love that.
Perfect. Lots of, just take a square and stretch it in various ways. While the 9000 resembled a stretched out 900, it was a good thing.
I mean, literally 9,000 does resemble a stretched out 900.
Dude, maybe he saw that and was like, yo, what if I had to figurative a zero to the line? It fit quite nicely with the brand's design language. In fact, while the first iteration resembled a sedan, the rear trunk still lifted up with the rear glass. So it technically was a hatchback, very ahead of its time. All sedans are like that now. Though the CD variant was released in 1988, which was an actual sedan.
Dude, I gotta say, the 9000 is really cool.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, that thing's cool.
Looks great.
I don't know if I'd ever own a Saab, but I like that one.
I would.
I don't think I'm right for it.
My brother just bought a Saab, but it's not like a real Saab.
No, we'll get to his Saab probably later.
Yeah.
It was also front-wheel drive like the 900, so nothing ran through the middle to inhibit space.
That kills it.
Yeah. And it was regarded as having excellent expandable cargo room. Besides that, it sported the same 2-liter engine, either turbocharged or not, which later grew to a 2.3 liters and had a 4-speed automatic transmission. After GM acquired ownership of Saab, more on that a bit later... A 3-liter, 210 horsepower V6 was available as well. But here's the thing about the 9000 as a joint development. It was a headache for Saab.
I bet.
The brand was so used to doing things in its own unique way and maintaining such high safety standards that working with Fiat, Alfa, Lancia proved difficult. Where Lancia found crash test results perfect, Saab found them quite lacking. The Saab ended up being produced of much thicker steel, having a completely different rear axle and thus being quite a bit more expensive to produce than planned. In the end, only 7 body components of the 9000 were shared with the Italians' creations, including the door all handle. 4 doors.
That's hilarious.
Jeez. Yeah, so 4 doors and then 3 other things.
That's really funny.
Probably like a dash trim.
Yeah, well, it's body panels.
Body, so exterior.
Yeah. Mm. Maybe roof.
Maybe.
That's hilarious.
However, there was a healthy upside to the 9000 shared chassis development.
Mud flap.
Automation.
Oh.
During Saab's time with the Fiat Group, it took a page from the Italian conglomerate's advanced use of automation at the time to streamline production. Therefore, the 9000's assembly was far more automated than any Saab model before.
Okay.
The 9000 lasted until 1998. But before its end, things were starting to look a bit different in the company's production lines.
Do you guys think there's like a special category of automakers that are, I wouldn't say inaccessible, but like should not be taken on by a casual fan of said automaker? Like, I'm thinking like Saab is in there, I think.
Oh, like they shouldn't buy one?
Like, yeah. Like if I'm someone like me who I think I'd love like most cars, I would say.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't mean I should go out and buy a Saab 9000. Like, if you're going to buy a Saab 9000, you got to be about that Saab life.
You got to become about that Saab life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you don't, you need a mechanic that's about it. Or you'll hate it.
I feel like Subaru is almost in that category. They're like, either way, could go either way.
Yes, yes and no. I mean, besides the engine being horizontal and making spark plugs chain hard to work on, it's not pretty much different than a normal car.
I think anything old, you got to kind of become about that. Like,
100%.
Right, like,
I think if you're dealing with inconvenience and, like, quirks, then you have to develop a certain appreciation and love for it, or else you're just going to throw it in the trash.
I think that's what it is like, you can't just fall in love with the shape of the car and the styling. It's like, you got to fall in love with the philosophy that went into making it.
Yes. Or else, because it's
with a company like Saab, because they were not doing anything like anyone else until they got bought
Saab's
out.
I think Saab's in there, Volvo, like Alfa Romeo probably, something like that.
Because they do it so differently that you have to learn about it or you're just going to be frustrated.
Yeah.
So you have to learn about it and develop an appreciation for it, or else you're just going to be pissed off at it.
Yep.
It's like pastry chefing.
Sure. It's a science, baking. Yeah. Can't just throw stuff in a Dutch oven.
Yeah, but you can have a new Lexus and not be a Lexus fan.
Right.
I don't think you can own an old Saab or an old Alfa Romeo or something
and not be a fan of it because
then you wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
Because there's so many negatives that come along with it
that
you have to be a fan in order to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an ugly dog.
And I love ugly dogs.
I love ugly dogs and lumps and all. Yep. You know,
Like you're touching them, like
You gotta scratch strategically.
Yeah, my,
I know all the lumps.
My childhood dog she's still around, and she's getting lumpy.
My dog's lumpy. That's one of her nicknames, Lumpy.
Lumpy.
Mm-hmm.
Lumps.
You got to know all the quirks. So you're just like, oh, you gotta open the door handle like this. Or you can't scratch, you got to scratch right here.
Yeah. After some financial turmoil in the late 80s, General Motors acquired 50% of Saab in 1989, which helped get it back on its feet eventually.
Mm-hmm.
The early 90s were quite brutal for the Swedish brand, with declining sales, troubles in the world economy, and even a factory closure. Not to get too ahead of ourselves here, but the blending of Saab and GM DNA caused some growing pains. Not only in Saab's unwillingness to fully homologate its cars to other platforms in General Motors' portfolio, but also Saab fans weren't keen when they did integrate GM technology. So it became tougher and tougher to be the outside-the-box innovative brand that it had always been. Still, when the new 900 was unveiled in 1994, things were looking good, for a little while at least. With 900,000 first-gen 900s built, the second-gen 900 was very well-received. Even though Saab was still reeling from its less-than-ideal situation with the Type 4 project, new platforms sharing with GM meant that it shared the same underpinnings as the Opel and Vauxhall Vectra, and thankfully made for a lot less of a messy proposition.
I got a messy proposition for you. Grape jelly fight.
Oh, that would be messy.
Yeah.
And so delicious.
Yeah. Fight each other with grape jelly.
Yeah, so Saab arguably needed that refresh too, because the original 900 was based on the 99, which went on sale way back in 1968. So it needs some...
I like the Saab 99. I think they're real good looking.
I think that's a good looking car.
What's with Saab and nines?
That's a great question. Is 9 a significant number in Swedish culture? So concerning the new 900, some hardcore Saab fans were dismayed at its styling and slight sellout status of the platform sharer, but it generally sold well until its end in 1998. This was the first Saab to ever have its engine mounted transversely, meaning it was flipped 90 degrees under the hood so its cylinders line up with the axles. This more normal engine placement meant normal transmission placement too. No more of that wacky front of the engine business. Yeah, we talked about that last time. The engine was like backwards in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that why it was front wheel drive?
Yeah.
But it was still longitudinal, but backwards?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Available engines for the 900 included a naturally aspirated 2.3-liter inline 4, a turbocharged 2-liter, and a 2.5-liter V6. However, as an article by the University of Cambridge perfectly described, the days of Saab and GM, quote, "For many years, Saab was caught in a catch-22 situation. It was a niche auto producer that needed greater economies of scale to survive in an industry in which scale was increasingly important. Yet scale diluted the very individuality that was a hallmark of the Saab brand. Although Saab needed a parent company such as GM to achieve this, the reality of sharing platforms and components with other GM models diluted the appeal of the Saab brand."
It just... Part of what made it cool was that it was a niche.
It was so backed up in the niche it couldn't even handle itself anymore.
And the people who liked Saabs liked that they were unique and kind of weird. And then once everyone started liking them, then they were like, I actually don't like these anymore.
Yeah. Platform sharing is good for scale, but it also
Justin would be like, if there are a million SVXs just driving around, and be like, yeah, you know what?
Well, Bucky Lassick is copying my style here.
Bucky Lassick and Doug DeMiro ruined Justin's swag. Yeah, just ruined his entire life. He's been building on this. Finally, he gets a shot to be a YouTuber, and he's going to bring it to the world. He's priming it, and then all of a sudden, Bucky Lassick.
So... Platform sharing, good for scale, but also meant that all the quirkiness and individuality that became so important to Saab's identity gradually started to fade away. And not only that, but any instance where Saab didn't find GM technology to be good enough, whether it be early navigation, infotainment, or safety engineering, became a major drain on development funding, which doesn't help with producing cars in a timely enough fashion to be profitable. They would make their own shit.
Yeah, so they got bought, and then they still made their own shit.
Which kind of defeats the whole purpose.
Because GM stuff sucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's like...
Don't blame them.
Yeah.
We'll do it ourselves.
We could call this straight-up stubbornness, but it was the good kind. Saab had high standards and stuck to its guns, even if it meant taking a financial hit for it.
It's airplane guns.
Hey, cannons.
Cannon.
That level of commitment is rare, but it usually means that a legend will be born, like the Tesla Model S or the Lexus LFA, two of James's favorite cars.
Yeah, two of the best cars
ever
made.
That took much longer than usual to develop, but ended up making quite an impact on their respective markets.
How did the LFA make an impact?
You know.
It sounded good.
But it didn't make an impact on a market at all. It was a huge failure because it was years behind.
Yeah.
But it sounded good.
It sounded good, but I wouldn't say that it made a huge impact on the market, and I wouldn't say that it was worth the wait, because the fact that they waited so long was the reason that it was a huge flop for Toyota. Yeah. And guess what? All of those cars that are selling for $1 million, all those $1 million LFAs, you know how much money Toyota gets out of that? Zero bucks. So it was a huge failure for Toyota still, and... maybe a success for like 8 rich guys. So we need more of that.
But it sounded good.
It sounds good. It sounds good. Lots of cars sound good. It sounds good.
But it sounded good.
Sounded good. Slow.
But it sounded good.
Okay, fine. What are you, the comment section?
Yes. I agree, though. It was a huge flop and letdown.
Yeah.
We'll get right back to it, but first, a few commercials.
However, Saab's quirkiness revealed itself in other ways after GM became more involved. During this era, one relationship many never thought could materialize did. Saab and NASCAR.
What?
In order to promote the 900's reliability, in 1996, it brought six 900s with different engines to Talladega Speedway and drove them for 8 days straight.
Whoa.
Driven by various auto journalists and personalities like us. We're the personalities.
No one's asked us to drive 8 days in a circle.
Yeah. I'm fine with that.
We don't need to be outside. Come on. I'm okay.
Somebody needs to invite Nolan to drive for 8 days in a circle.
To prove the reliability of a car.
Let's go to Alabama and drive for 8 days straight.
Yeah, it's even more muggy.
Yeah. One made it the entire time by covering 25,000 miles. And even with pit stops, maintained an average speed of 140 miles per hour. That seems terrifying.
That's pretty crazy.
In a front-wheel drive car on a banked oval.
Sounds fun.
That's insane.
I'm rethinking the invite.
Invite Nolan.
Yeah, let me know.
The event earned it several world records, including the 1 hour, 24 hour, and 25,000-mile production car average speed.
Didn't Subaru beat that later?
Probably.
Yeah.
Did they?
The RA is a record attempt.
Mm. That's cool.
So they drove it for 24 hours to prove its reliability or something. Mm. Look where that got them.
In the pits. Despite the bizarre situation of watching a Saab rip along an oval circuit while overhearing both Swedish and Southern accents in the pit areas.
No, that would be weird, yeah.
Yeah. The car proved to be competent at the task. Motor Trend was there and spoke highly of it.
Okay, let's hear it.
The Saab 900 used most of their suspension travel to handle the bumps caused by the tunnel under the track. The downward G-forces are pretty incredible, reported to be as high as 1.5 Gs in the banking. As the driving experience becomes more familiar, you really begin to appreciate how well the Saabs are suited for this record attempt. They're extremely easy to drive at high speeds. Upon leaving the pits, you just flick through the gears, and within a half lap, you're at 5,600 RPM in high gear, about 150 miles per hour.
Wow, thank you so much for that in-depth coverage.
Yeah, I can't believe you found that audio. Saab even experienced an impromptu, unplanned safety test.
Uh-oh.
A strong gust of wind during a thunderstorm caused you had to do some of this in the rain.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, no. What tires were they running? Yeah. Holy crap.
Caused one of the 900s to smack headfirst into the track's wall at over 80 miles per hour. That hurts.
Dang.
Driven by Saab employee Herman Rudstrom, both front airbags deployed and the car was thoroughly written off. Remarkably, / thankfully, Rundstrom walked away from it.
And now he talks about it at every Thanksgiving.
And then I was in Alabama, and it started to rain. Okay, Dad, let's go to bed. And the rain, I walked away. Saab celebrated its record-setting achievements by offering a special Talladega edition of the coupe, convertible, and five-door model in 1997. Each had 16-inch, seven-spoke alloy wheels.
I bet that sold great.
Color matched, yeah, the Saab Talladega.
Yeah, like what?
Who was the target
for the architect
for
who loves Ricky Bobby.
Only employees bought it.
It's pretty cool looking. Those wheels are not bespoke for that.
Those are cool.
They're called Bugattis. Like, those wheels are on, like, a ton of different...
Well, really?
Car. Yeah, Volkswagen had them.
They're like a seven-spoke design. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
You can buy them 5Y120. Mm-hmm. They're made by Bugatti.
Get out of here!
Yep. The same people...
You're bullshitting me.
I swear to Lord.
You are yanking my chain.
I swear to Lord.
You're cranking my hog.
Hand to the sky. I'm not cranking your hog. But that's not as quirky as it got. It would get quirkier once two new models were unveiled a few years later.
Let's go, dude. What? Even more quirky than that, James?
Dude, more quirky than a Saab Talladega.
Talladega right, Saab.
Here we go.
Talladega,
I don't know if I can Saab. Handle this.
Next you know, I'm going to find out they're in NASCAR.
The shake and bake Saab.
Man. They won one race, maybe.
I don't know about that.
No, doubt it. They were in a rally cross 1 year.
Oh, that's cool.
That's kind of neat. Okay.
Sam Hubinette just showed up, was racing against like all these Subarus. And he just shows up in this like 10-year-old Saab.
Okay.
No, he was in an actual Saab, not the 92X.
Really?
Keeping up with all these modern cars and this old.
That's cool.
Big right. Orange rally car. That's great.
The 900 became the 93 in 1998. But besides the name change, nobody really noticed. At least on the outside, as Saab boasted that over 1,100 changes were made, but it generally felt like more of a refresh than a brand new generation. However, once GM gained full control of Saab...
Like Gen Z.
Once GM gained full control of Saab in 2000, the first signal of the brand being fully absorbed was the new 9-3 in 2003, guys.
Brand number 28 of GM.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Based, say that again.
Yep. Based on the GM Epsilon 1 platform, the new 9-3 still had a lot of Saab-ness about it, with a modest 210 horsepower out of its now General Motors Ecotec Turbo Inline 4 engine, baby.
Hey. I remember seeing one of these in the mall.
Yeah. In the mall, where they're trying to show it off? Yeah, like, yeah. What'd you think?
I thought it was pretty good looking.
All right.
The Ecotec is dope,
though. You still see these things on the road a lot. Yeah. Probably because they're GM powered.
Yeah. It's the Ecotec.
Yeah.
Justin loves the Ecotec. He wants one for his Impulse.
I want to put one in my Impulse.
That'd be very interesting.
If you get the turbo ones, they're already fully built. They can hold 500 horsepower.
Dang.
100 horsepower and a little Impulse like that?
Scary.
Dude, no, thank you. I like 300 horsepower.
Get it?
That's the goal.
350.
This thing had a manual transmission and a spacious, nicely appointed interior and overall great looks. It's a handsome car.
It's good looking.
It's a handsome car.
It's good.
Sadly, though, the driving experience.
I saw one in the mall.
Sadly.
So they don't just put any car
in the
mall.
No, they really don't.
What color was it?
Silver, like the picture.
They put the Saab 9-3 in the mall.
Yep.
They put a Shelby Cobra that you can enter to win in the mall.
They do.
Yep.
It never leaves the mall, though.
I know. I saw an Aston Martin covered in Year of the Dragon wrap in the mall.
Whoa.
The
other day.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
I love the mall. I love the cars in the mall.
What's your favorite
Any
mall?
Any more questions?
Where do you go to? What mall you go
this
to?
This was in Southgate Plaza. Oh. South Coast Plaza. Southgate Plaza.
Okay.
South Coast Plaza.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
It's where me and all the Chinese billionaires hang out.
That's where VinFast hangs out.
That's where VinFast hangs out. VinFast also has a store at the Century City Mall.
They
have a store at the 3rd Street Promenade, VinFast.
Wow, VinFast.
And I went
buying up all the LA real estate.
I went to 3rd Street like a few days after our first VinFast review came out, and I saw the store, and I was like, I had to go to a restaurant next to it, and I was like, I don't want to walk. I don't want to.
Hey, one second, please, sir.
The week that episode aired, there were VinFast just like driving through my neighborhood, and I was just like, why are there so many VinFast? I wasn't even in that episode. Turns out there was an EV driving experience down the road.
That's hilarious.
Just walking Edgar like. Yeah. Oh shit! That's the same car.
That's hilarious. Sadly, the driving experience of the 9-3, it didn't really do its predecessor proud. Okay, as Carr and Driver put it in 2004, quote: "The car's handling, composed and restful on the highway, became hard to coordinate in the mountains. The front tires are doing too much of the work, and the business of trading braking grip for turning or power while trying to keep the other cars in sight became quite taxing."
Yeah.
"The process led to a rather ragged driving style."
That's not what you want.
No.
Taxing?
Nah.
Not taxing.
The exact opposite of what you want.
I want calming and smooth, not taxing and ragged.
Most of the cars we build here are pretty taxing to drive.
All of our cars are bad.
A few years later, GM went ham with the Saab brand, okay? There were two distinct models that weren't very Saab at all, but the badge's blessing on their hoods made them great cars regardless.
The Saab first, Coupe de Ville.
I'm trying to find. Oh, yeah. We're going to get to it.
The Saab 150.
We're going to get to it.
Saab S150.
The 2005 Saab 92X Aero represented a massive shift from what originally made Saab a Saab. It was textbook and blatant badge engineering. And even if it was still a cool car, it was a significant marker in the brand's impending downfall in 2011.
Absolutely.
To enthusiasts, the car is essentially a Subaru Impreza WRX.
wagon.
It's sick. It is actually sick. Yeah. At the time, GM had a 20% share of Subaru. So why not capitalize on the premium compact market? This was before BMW brought over the 1 Series or the Audi A3, and Volvo was already seeing success with its S40 sedan and V50 wagon. Despite that competition, this is by far one of the best examples of badge engineering. You know what? I'll co-sign that.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's absolutely a great car.
It's just a little better looking.
It's like, oh, I like Subarus, but I just got my corporate job.
Yeah. I can't show up with a bug-eye hatch. Yeah. It's got to be this.
So it grows up a little bit.
Yeah.
But you still get the same fun.
They
had the aero and the non-aero, so you got a non-turbo and a turbo.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
So you know the difference with the hood scoops.
I did not know that.
Aero means aeroplane. Mm-hmm.
The 92X was essentially a WRX with a better-looking exterior trim, a nicer interior, and added overall refinement. It unsubaru'd the Subaru part of the car, which is no easy task. With revised engine mounts, some altered engine tuning, thicker sound deadening, and better suspension tuning, it polished up the rackety sewing machine under the hood.
Oh, come on.
Cut down on the
On
the tin can feel that Subies often possess.
How dare you!
And made the car's overall driving experience much more pleasant.
It was very, I've driven both extensively.
Yeah, I don't think it's not that much. No, there's no way.
Yeah.
In fact, a former employee of Donut, mm-hmm. Jesse, had a Saab 92X.
Two of them.
And he took the seats from our old Subaru and put them in his car because they were nicer.
Yeah, the leather seats.
Limited
leatherette.
Ones.
Yeah, leatherette. But,
made from a plastic cowl.
But unlike the less than ideal driving experience of the 9.3, this wagon, guys, it was rousing to drive.
Rousing.
As Car and Driver put it in 2004, quote,
"This car makes me rock hard."
They liked it. They liked it. Yeah. I'm not going to read the whole quote.
It's funny, you know, because they liked the Subaru. I doubt they reviewed the Subaru like that.
Yeah. Probably not.
"Steering is superb, offering crisp turn-in, a pheromone center peel, a quick response that isn't too quick."
Oh, what I like about a quick response is that it's not too
quick. Yeah, when it's not too quick.
Yeah.
"The overall feel is light yet amply communicative." This is like all contradictions. "Rarely requiring adjustment to the wheel after taking a set." I feel like sometimes...
That's what driving all-wheel drive is like.
Yeah. I also feel like sometimes car journalists are like, "I better let everyone know that I know how to drive." Mm-hmm. "I better let everyone that reads this know that I know how to drive." Mm-hmm. So, like, they describe driving so freaking much.
It's a lot. Yeah.
And I'm allowed to say that because I'm better than a car.
This was the first Saab ever to get all-wheel drive. Which is kind of crazy,
which is
actually
weird, because they're all rally snow cars.
And that made is weird. Huh. That is interesting.
Very interesting.
Huh.
Yeah.
Who knew?
However, there was one huge issue to reckon with the 92X Aero. It was far, far more expensive than the WRX, which made it awfully hard to justify, both between GM-linked DNA and the competition. Yeah, it was interesting.
Jim from the Office had
Jim
a 92X.
That's right. Jim from the Office.
Yeah.
Everyone's favorite cool guy,
apparently.
Jim from The Office had a 92X.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve Carell from The Office had a PT Cruiser.
PT Cruiser and a Chrysler Sebring.
The Sebring convertible, which we've had cars.
Yeah. Oh, we've had both.
We've had all three.
Wow. We've had all the Office cars except for.
We need Dwight's Firebird.
Firebird.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sick. Cool. We got to get Dwight's Firebird.
All right.
Let's do it. We drove all the office cars.
Yeah. We drove all the cars from the office. It might do well.
It might
That's
do pretty well.
Not a terrible
idea. Dude, for a road trip video?
Yeah, it'd be
we
great.
Drove all the cars in the office.
That's pretty funny.
Have Jeremiah in the Camaro.
I bet there's a, and then we can make a series of it. We drive all the cars from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't steal this. This is a record. If you steal it.
You're going to know.
Well, trademark.
What's the date?
Today is March 11th. It's 2:10 p.m.
We'll strike you.
It's a good idea.
We'll strike you. We know people
That's
at YouTube.
That's a pretty good idea. Okay. So.
We drove all the cars from the office a road trip.
The Seinfeld one would be tough.
Seinfeld. Dibs on 9/11.
Dibs on 9/11.
They were
said Osama bin Laden.
Weirdly enough, my Subaru showed up in Seinfeld. That's how
really
ingrained cars were in Seinfeld.
Whoa.
Follow the money. Whoa.
Really weird.
John Voight, the LeBaron convertible.
Oh yeah.
Sobs.
Yeah. 9/11.
Kramer's car.
Yeah, he had a big old like.
He had a Cadillac at one point.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Elaine,
she has a car.
No.
Yeah.
Elaine has a car.
Doesn't she?
Yeah, right.
I thought
they would not give Elaine a car.
How does she
get here? It's New York City, baby.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They got cars in the
shocked
ground.
Shocked they even had cars in that show.
What does Jerry's parents drive?
Jerry's parents drive a Cadillac.
Cadillac. I want that one.
Jerry Stiller's the goat.
All right. Okay. So now, Justin, it's your favorite part of the episode here. The 2005 to 2009 Saab 97X was a Chevy Trailblazer underneath with the same V6 and V8 engines available. Mm-hmm. It was generally received in the same way that the 92X was. Okay. What?
I would rock one of these.
Yeah.
They're great.
These are cool.
This thing had better overall luxury and refinement than the Trailblazer. Mm-hmm. It also had better looks.
They came in two colors.
Yeah.
Silver and black.
But there's an even better
black.
One. The 97X Aero was essentially the new money coked out version of this car. Okay, it was a rebadged Trailblazer SS. Is this what your brother has?
That's what he has.
Okay. Featuring a 6-liter LS2 with 390 horsepower, 395 pounds feet, and 0 to 60 took 5.5 seconds. Dude, that's sick.
Dude, this thing rules.
The amount of people, because his chops, like it is modified heavily. He took it to a car meet and everyone's like, dude, you swapped the Saab? He's just like, no.
Stupid. Look at the internet.
Look at the internet. Stupid.
Stupid. Look at the freaking internet.
So
these things are cool.
Dude, that's awesome.
I want to put a big old Whipple supercharger on it.
Mm-hmm. They're all wheel drive as well. Yeah, you can get them rear wheel drive as well.
Dang.
You can get them rear wheel drive.
Mm-hmm. And
tub it.
Yeah. They also come with a rear air ride. For
is
like
towing
and stuff, yeah,
that's cool.
It's Goodyear ride.
It's adjustable so that you can make the ride less harsh and stuff.
Dude, this thing rules.
Yeah,
it looks good too.
Yep. It does look good. This was not only the largest Saab ever built, but also the fastest. That's hilarious. So super loud.
Thanks, GM.
It's 'cause he got an LS.
So the 97 was already struggling in sales. This thing wasn't really for the dedicated Saab connoisseur who needed understated. It's smartly styled and safe transport because it's a big old honker.
Yeah, it's a big old honker.
So,
for sure.
Apparently, the 97X in general wasn't smartly styled or understated either. In the seven months following its introduction, Porsche sold more 911s than this thing. So between this car and the struggling 92X, things were looking quite bleak for Saab in the mid-2000s.
But their cars were sick.
Yeah.
Honestly.
They made two of the coolest cars.
And failed miserably.
And then failed miserably.
I like the 97 Aero, but I think I like the way the Trailblazer SS looks more.
I mean, at this point, I think I'd rather have a Trailblazer SS.
That's
I think
the
maybe
trick.
We just like...
But those are harder to get.
But if you're only looking at Saabs, you're like, yeah, this Saab is sick.
It's funny that
But here's
exists.
The thing. The Saab is at least $4,000 cheaper.
Yeah, that's
really?
The thing.
Trailblazer.
They're going to put a tax on that. Mm-hmm. The Trailblazer tax. The SS tax. You know they're going to... Yeah,
the Trailblazer is way better.
And the cops are not looking at a Saab.
Yeah, exactly. I mean...
I'm almost 40 years old. The cops ain't looking at me.
Now the IRS is. The money cops.
Yeah.
The post office is coming for
the post office is coming for my mail. My correspondence is in jeopardy.
Your stamp was slightly crooked.
All right, here's the thing about the late 2000s. It was so much cooler back then than it is now.
I don't know.
They really stacked the deck against Saab and its parent company, GM.
The late 2000s is they.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm just clarifying for the listener.
All right, maybe it's just the Illuminati.
The Illuminati did
all right,
not
back
like
in the late
the
2000s,
police.
The Illuminati really stacked the deck against Saab and its parent company,
I'm
GM.
Okay, I'm listening.
Okay? Saab was in a tailspin once the 2010s rolled around.
Jets.
2010s aren't good. How about... The yes. How about the Strokes?
That was 2010s?
No, that was early 2000s,
yeah,
I guess.
That's what I'm thinking, man.
2010s was Donut.
2010, dude, I just remember 2012 to like 2015 being, music-wise at least, one of my least favorite couple years
what happened for popular music.
I don't know, dude. I just remember being in my dorm room and thinking, this is what...
Isn't that when trap like, started?
No, it's when, like,
look, we
Tyler
had some,
the Creator
some,
came out.
Some, yeah, there was Tyler, but also there was, like, Imagine Dragons.
Oh, yeah. Imagine Dragons sucks.
Radioactive was
there's like, all, I mean, there's always been
all
shitty
that
stuff.
Was on while I was overseas.
Have you heard the new Schoolboy Q?
Yes.
It's very good.
I like it.
All right. I'm glad he's back.
Yeah, me too. Welcome back, Q.
Welcome back, Q. He's my style icon. It was producing seemingly good cars. Okay, Saab was around this time. But between losing a lot of its traditional Saab customer appeal, creating expensive, extra blatant badge engineering that made its models a very tough sell against their platform siblings, and the world economy taking a nosedive into the Great Recession, it was proving difficult to level off.
Yeah, that's not good.
People didn't have the money to spend on a muscle truck in an architect costume.
And, yeah.
And GM didn't have the funds to make them either. Well, GM didn't have the money to make a lot of cars, which is why Saturn and Oldsmobile got executed.
Pontiac, oh, wow. Saturn, Oldsmobile, Hummer. Yeah.
The new 9.5 debuted in 2011 and was once again based on a GM platform. It was overall well-received thanks to its looks, excellent handling, and punchy enough turbocharged V6 at its helm, but too little, too late. GM sold the Saab brand to Dutch sports car manufacturer Spyker shortly thereafter, and the path was nothing but rocky from there. Can you imagine being Saab and be like, we got bought by Spyker?
Yeah.
Oh, the people that made that one car?
A one
Missy
car
Elliott that Missy Elliott drove?
Yeah.
And that was it?
Yeah.
It was in one video game?
Spyker. Spyker built the 9.5 utilizing GM parts and seemed to be off to a decent start, though only a year passed before the company declared bankruptcy and faded away. Guys, we have totally misjudged this.
That reminds me of Sears and Kmart. It's like, how did Sears buy Kmart? They barely exist.
Yeah.
And then they both died.
Both died. Oh, no. Well, at least Sears was big at one point.
Yeah, Spyker's at one point, like, when they were selling houses out of a freaking catalog.
Sears used to have houses and cars. Spyker's just like,
Spyker. What?
They
made a car. Yeah, right? Saab should have bought Spyker.
Dude, something lasting a year in business before failing is like
pretty bad. Spyker's back now, right?
Spyker's back, baby. Better than ever.
I don't know.
Making EVs, I think.
Oh.
I don't know. Don't quote me.
Next up, the Saab brand was bought by NEVS, or National Electric Vehicle Sweden, a group of Chinese investors who wanted the Saab nameplate for a future 9.3 electric vehicle.
Gotcha.
There was some buzz about his comeback in 2017, but those plans are still, 7 years later, unrealized.
Have you been on their website lately?
No.
It says, sorry.
They're gone.
We're not going to launch this anytime soon. It's being pocketed. Peace.
Thanks for the money.
Mm-hmm.
Though there was also a tiny bit of buzz just 2 years later, where none other than Swedish supercar manufacturer Koenigsegg expressed having a hand in it. Finally, some recent news from December 2023 is that one of NEB's designs was bought by a Canadian company by the name of EB Electra. It's called the Emily GT, and it certainly looks like it could have some Saab-ness.
Could you imagine? I drive an Emily.
Kind of car out named Emily.
That's kind of cool. Emily. I like that.
It's
as
like
a,
Julia.
A Julia, an Emily, a Rachel.
A Rachel.
Debbie.
I think all of those.
I got that new Debbie GT. This thing kind of looks like a Saab, I guess.
Uh huh.
Looks like a Lucid.
It just looked like a car.
Now, it's sad that Saab went the way that it did. Quirky cars that flip the script in one way or another are integral to moving competition forward.
Mm-hmm,
but Saab didn't just do this with one car in its lineup. It did it with everything it produced from beginning to end, whether it was striking styling defined for optimal aerodynamics, way ahead of its time safety ratings, front-wheel drive, or smart and spacious interior design. Saab offered it all and gave its European competition a very strong run for its money.
Yeah, that's a tough run, man.
Yeah.
You know, you go strong for like 30, 40 years, and then all it takes is one decade for everything to fall apart. That's pretty sad.
All it takes to get purchased by GM.
Life, bro.
Yeah. That's life.
That's life.
And then GM writes you off.
So Spikers is around, or they do have a website. I don't know if it's the same people involved. They have their new car is called the Spiker C8, which is what their old one was called. This one's called the C8 Praetor.
Praetor.
Which is Latin for fighter or warrior.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that's great.
It sounds like they were like, oh, you know what we should call it? Like warrior. Look up what Latin is for warrior.
We Googled
it. Like, they were like, it's Praetor. They're like,
yeah, that's not really a. We couldn't find a better one. Yeah. Yeah. I don't really like that name. Anyway, it
could have been like Phalanx or something.
We have some. I like Saabs. I think they're cool and quirky and weird. I'd love to have a Saab 9-9 one day. Really cool wheel designs. Mm-hmm.
That is one thing they've always done really well.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have some listener mail. Hey there. I recently went through a really tough breakup with the guy that I thought I would marry. Uh-oh. Is this one of our exes?
Uh-oh.
His name was Nolan Sykes. Can you cut his dong off for me?
Oh, God.
I recently went through a really tough breakup with the guy I thought I would marry. I've been heartbroken and crying for weeks. When we started dating a few years ago, I was listening to Pascast nonstop, but slowly stopped listening while we were dating. I played a few episodes for him, and he wasn't really into it. Well. And I honestly focused on so many other things, I stopped doing and listening to things that really interested me. I turned on an episode today, number 205, for the first time in a long time, and it's honestly so good to be back.
Welcome back.
I laughed so hard while listening at work that my coworkers were giving me looks.
He wasn't worth it.
So
they're not worth it.
I don't know if you ever thought your podcast would help someone great get through a breakup, but it is. Thanks for making me laugh, Kirsten. Well, you know what, Kirsten? That's why we started this podcast.
Yes.
To help people get through breakups.
You know, the fact that it's not like, let's see.
With zero focused, relationship advice.
I honestly focused on so many other things, stopped doing and listening to things that interested me. Yeah. That's, I mean.
Number one key
that's
right
a key
there.
Thing right
there. Can't lose yourself in a relationship.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I'm really sorry that happened, but it sounds like things will be better.
Hey, you are way better off. Better. Hey, if you were dating a guy who didn't like listen to a bunch of idiots talk about cars, then you're better off without him.
Yeah, exactly. He probably drove a Saab.
Yeah, he probably, honestly.
He's probably just mad GM shut
listen,
Saab
he
down,
probably you know? Deserves to die in a swamp.
No, okay. But I hope you're, it sounds like
I'm
you're
not
better.
Saying kill him, but if he dies in a swamp, so be it.
It sounds like you're doing better, and that's really great, Kirsten. So thank you so much for your email. Hang in there. It'll be better. Thank you so much for sending your email.
And thank you, Justin, for being here.
Hey.
Filling in for Joe, who's joined the French Legion.
Yep. Yeah. He's out there fighting in his little white cap. If you'd like to follow Justin, follow him on all social media, at Justin Freeman. Follow James, at James Pumphrey, and follow me, at Nolan J. Sykes. Big thank you to our producers, our production staff, I should say now.
Yeah,
you hear him laughing
over
the staff
homie.
Now. We got Kristen Felsky, Audrey Holden, Gavin Kinzel. Nick is hanging around here somewhere. Nick Giamusso, he's waving his hand from behind the flat over there.
Waving his hand from behind the flat.
Our writer this week, Peter Nelson. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
We will see you next time on Pascast.